Am I my brother's keeper? Cain asks insolently in response to God's inquiry as to Abel's whereabouts. We know that this was a rhetorical question, for having just murdered his brother in a fit of jealous rage, Cain had certifiably demonstrated that he was not his brother's keeper. For those of you who might be a little less familiar with this story that's found in Genesis 4, Cain's tart question is really an aside in the myth of the sons of Adam and Eve. Cain was a settled farmer while Abel was a shepherd, and Cain's violence toward his brother was precipitated, apparently, by God's rejection of Cain's sacrifice of the produce of his fields, while Abel's meat had been accepted. Some scholars have theorized that this story is about the conflict between nomadic and agricultural cultures. The brother's keeper remark at first may not seem relatively important to the story, except for demonstrating that a murderer just might feel a little bit defensive. But it's an imposing question. It's a question that has stayed with us and seems central to human social life. Are we our brother's keepers? This morning, I want to invite us all, including myself, to examine beliefs about whether we are or can be our brother's or sister's keepers. And if so, how so? Now, of course, at one level, we co-create this world. I think as Unitarian Universalists, we're all aware of that. And in that sense, we are all our brother's and another's keepers. But at some other level, the means that we have of helping one another can be limited. Now, what does it mean to be a helper, to be helping? There are the helping vocations. I know many of you are or have been involved in those vocations, having careers of teaching, counseling, social work, social advocacy, ministry, nursing, doctoring, consulting. The list goes on and on. And we do these things because we think at some level people can be helped. If you're a parent, you help your children, supporting them to grow into, we hope, a fruitful adulthood. And then there's our day-to-day helping that wouldn't exactly be a vocation. It's more like good deeds, donating a car for use for someone struggling to make it in a new job, raising funds for relief efforts after a natural disaster. Helping could be long-term, such as advocating over the decades for a social justice cause, fostering or adopting a child who needs a home. And then there are the good deeds that we do on a daily basis that might not have a capital G, but they are nevertheless great. Spending an afternoon working to build a house for someone who needs a home. An afternoon at the food bank, working the cash register at the thrift store. Talking to someone, taking someone who is sick a casserole. Good deeds may be rather intangible. Just listening to someone who is down, letting someone have that cut in line in front of you at the grocery store because it really looks like they could use it. Saying an encouraging word to that batter who just struck out on the Little League team. These are just a few of the examples of human giving that saves and touches us all every day of our lives. Someone opens that door for you when your hands are full. Someone responds to your distress call and says, yes, they can pick up the kids today because you're stuck in traffic. And yet, at another level, our culture says that we are all needy and in need of help. And let me explain what I mean by that. Maybe help isn't the right word here. Maybe needy is. I know on the one hand we have this idea, especially in America, of the self-made man, the rugged individualist. And if you don't think that myth is alive and well, Think about the outcry that was caused a year or two ago when Obama suggested that successful business people were being supported by society in terms of laying of infrastructure that helped businesses to succeed. However, at the other end, and I think strongly countering this myth, is a culture where no one is responsible. We are told so often, we have no control. We are victims of fate. And while I don't mean to downplay the role of fate in our lives, yes, we are blown by the wind. Somewhere, we respond. And yet it seems our culture constantly tells us to seek a causal link for our ills, a link that is outside of ourselves. Out of shape, sadly, this was caused by terrible genetics. Unhappy, not where you want to be in life. You had the wrong upbringing, the wrong parents. They gave you a terrible and damaging childhood. Poor relationships. It's not my fault. Everyone I meet is a jerk. Lots of the chatter from the culture in our culture seems to be about who or what we can find to take the responsibility for our own lives off of our shoulders. I wouldn't go as far as to say that it's caused by our legal culture, which has monetized fault, but certainly it's exacerbated. And this is why we are constantly signing all sorts of liability waivers. Parents, you know what I'm talking about. The liability waivers that say, come heck or high water, we are not going to blame the other party. Eventually, I think this has had the effect of making us, in our own minds, seek out culprits for the failings of others and our own. And this runs a little counter, maybe very counter, to the very heart of Unitarian Universalists. Because, after all, ours is a tradition of radical responsibility. It is not a great God up in the sky who determines our fate, who determines the world, but human hands who do. Now, God helps those who help themselves is oft quoted. It is not found in scripture, as many of us have been led to believe, but rather it was attributed to Benjamin Franklin, who was on hand for the first openly Unitarian worship service in London in 1774. This is not to say, of course, that we should not or do not want to be compassionate when help is sought. But how can we best serve other people? While we might fervently believe that others have inherent worth and dignity, we know that all are not created equally, with equal opportunities anyway. One of us is born into wealth and privilege. Another goes to sleep hungry most nights. Some of us are able to sit here in this room in relative peace, while others seek safety from a war-torn country, not knowing where they will sleep that night. This sermon is not about not reaching out to help those who are in need, who do not have the privileges that we might have at any given time. More than that, it's about the mindset that we bring to our helping. Because in giving aid, in offering help, however well-intentioned we might be, we need to be careful, because we can also inadvertently foster helplessness, even a lack of confidence. Consider the comments of University of California professor Faith Ringgold, who before becoming a professor was a famed artist and children's book author. She was working as an art teacher in the public schools in Harlem, where she had grown up. She became very upset when she heard the whisperings from other teachers about students. She writes, they would say, oh, poor so-and-so, they can't do the work. Their mothers their mothers on drugs, or their families on welfare. Well, that's a weird sympathy that just drags you down, down, down. Thank you. Expectations are the key. We were raised to know that you could do it, and that's that. From our compassion, we must not make the mistake of moving into patronizing, from which attitudes about victimhood and powerlessness can sometimes spring. It's been many, many years ago. My husband and I lived in Mali in West Africa. While we were living there, we knew a little boy named Soleimani. Soleimani would bring us little clay figurines of animals that he had made. However, he could not run and play with the other children. We don't know what he had suffered. Perhaps it had been polio with some disfiguring problem. His legs were twisted, and he walked with an agonized, distorted gait. One day, Michael and I were out on our motorcycle, some 3 miles away from our village, on the way to an appointment elsewhere. We saw Soleimani. Soleimani was carrying the family milk gourd. His mother had sent him 5 miles away to the next village to get milk for the family. We were stunned. We were already two on the moto and due to be elsewhere. We couldn't offer him a ride, but he waved happily at seeing us. I've often reflected on this story. Now, granted, we'd love to see Soleimani live in a country where he could get medical care for whatever it was that befell his limbs. But also, this boy, I think, grew up with great strength. Soleimani, sent by his mother 3 miles to get milk, 5 miles to get milk for the family, who, despite his different ableness, was given the responsibility of contributing to the family, who was not being taught to see himself as helpless, but in spite of his disability, knew that he had something real and important to give. Sonia Choquette, who is an intuition coach, says, ultimately, it's the over-empathetic heart that may be giving a vote of no confidence to those you love and care about. Perhaps, just perhaps, if we hold people responsible for their own lives, they will live up to that. It's a reminder to honor the ability that those around us can take care of themselves. In our desire to help, it is so easy to fall into the arrogant trap of saying, I know better. I can take care of things better, instead of leaving that for others to do. And this is what I think Edwin Friedman was trying to convey in his parable of the bridge. I don't know, did any of you recognize people in that skit? Perhaps people you know. Perhaps people you may have been at times in your life. Friedman was a rabbi and a family therapist who practiced, and apparently a Jones professor at one point, am I right? He was a family therapist who practiced and served in the Washington, D.C. area for 4 decades. Over the course of his career, he'd worked with thousands of people and families, and he became convinced that the biggest way to make a positive impact on the lives of others around you was to self-differentiate. That is, to not fall into a trap of trying to fulfill others' emotional needs, or in ever trying to change them, but rather to deliberately pursue who one wants to be and feels oneself to be with the utmost integrity. Over time, he saw that the presence of members of a family or an organization with disability were able to move on with their lives and succeed from the place they had been when they entered his doors for counseling. Much of aid that is effective, Friedman would say, may not have to do with providing any care at all, but seeking to meet one's own needs. It is for us to be careful that we don't inadvertently teach people that they can't take care of themselves, not only physically, but especially emotionally. And if we fail to do this, we shouldn't be surprised if we see people walking around with ropes at their waist. This reminds me of those instructions that you might get when you fly, well, that you will get when you fly on an airplane, right? In the event of a loss of cabin pressure, put your own oxygen mask on first. Take care of yourself first, and then see what you can do to help the person next to you with their mask. It won't help them if you're suffocating as well, will it? Sometimes, as on the bridge, we may not even realize what has happened before there is a rope laid in our hands. But we are not responsible for the emotional lives of others. And even when we try to be, we are doomed to fail, as our man on the bridge ruminated to himself. Either he would spend the rest of his life were haunted by what he would do, what would happen, or he would, I'm sorry, I lost my thread there. Either he would spend the rest of his life haunting by what he didn't do or haunted by what he did. Now, we all want to think of ourselves, I think, at least sometimes, as giving, ready to help, selfless. But that last one, why would we think that selflessness is a virtue? Perhaps because we know of the opposite. We all know, can bring to mind the examples of the greedy, the self-centered, those who don't seem to care for anybody else, whose actions don't only not help, but hurt others. And yet, when people live responsible lives of integrity that do satisfy their own needs for creative outlet, for achievement, for even pleasure, so many benefits do accrue to us. I mean, we are constantly helped, if you will, by the pursuits of others, unrelated to their intentions of helping us. Art, for example. At some level, we might think of art as a creative endeavor that serves the person making it and perhaps a few aficionados, but really, wouldn't that time be better spent doing something to help the world? Well, I don't know. What about the children that see that art? What will they aspire to? What about my daughter in the art class, who I hope will one day be able to make a living for herself doing something in the realm of art? What about the gardener who works daily producing those beautiful blooms that lift the hearts of everyone who see them? I don't have a lot of time to unpack this, and I know it's complicated, and I'm not sure I'm making sense. Let me throw it in the negative. What would the world look like if no one pursued their heart's desire, but everyone was focused on being selfless and trying to help everyone else? It's a world that's impossible to imagine. Primitive, I would suspect, with no development of human culture. There'd be no art, no architecture, no music, few skills. We might just manage to feed ourselves because we need to grow food for other people too, but how far could we really progress beyond that? What I'm getting at is that I think it's a mistake to see the things that we do for ourselves as not giving to others. Now, we're a both and people. I believe it can be both and. It is acts of our individual initiative and creative passion that create the ground that all of our lives proceed from. You can think of any pursuit, whether your thing is designing buildings, or sewing clothing, or doing legal work, running a cash register, growing tomatoes, making music, just showing up to do one's job to the best of your ability. Now, if you really hate that job, maybe we need to talk afterward. That's a different issue. But doing those things may be the best and most helpful thing you can do for others. Back on the bridge, in the story we just told, our man is faced with a terrible choice: pursue his own wants or stay there forever with a dead weight attached to him. He's a thoughtful guy. He's compassionate. He tries, but that dead weight just refuses to take responsibility. And finally, he realizes what he must do. I don't know if anyone has ever handed you a rope, but I know I have been handed a rope. It's a tough place to be. The woman who's hanging over the side has given up. She's made a choice perhaps more injurious than even a suicide. She's made her life someone else's responsibility and is holding a hostage. It's a crazy situation, but it's nonetheless real, I think. Friends, we live in this paradox. Of course, we are in countless ways blown by fate. We do not control our ultimate destinies. I would never mean to suggest otherwise. But our response, the energy we bring to it, to our lives, that is ours, our choice to make, and ours alone. And how we handle ourselves, not the advice or even that physical help we give, is perhaps the most useful gift that we give to one another. Our aspiration then as helpers should not be a supremacy of self, someone who knows better, someone who can do better, someone who has more to offer, but a self-awareness. From this place of awareness, be clear what it is that we are willing to do for others and what it is that we are not. Friedman didn't end his tale this way, but in the end, I think that the woman who has jumped over the bridge changes her mind. Recognizing that the person on the bridge will not take responsibility for her life, but will stand by to support, to help, to lift when she is ready. She is inspired. Faced with that resolve from the man, she creates her own resolve and in turn lifts herself up.